Ian Schur, the CEO of Rescue South Africa. It's a pleasure to talk with you. And thanks for joining us here on The Home Run. It must be about 20 years since we had those mad experiences. What for you, if you look back at some of those trips, what are some of the moments that still stay with you?
Hi, Paula. Nice to hear from you again. And hello to your listeners.
Hi.
Well, I've been doing this for 45 years, but Rescue South Africa, we founded 25 years ago, and it's still going today. So the last call out we had was to Malawi last year. So we've still been going, not as often as we used to, but we still turn out to calls around more sub-Saharan Africa than the rest of the world, where we, in the early days, there weren't that many teams in the world, so our expertise and the equipment that we did have was really sought after and needed. Now, with 25 years that have passed, there are many teams in most countries around the world, and not in sub-Saharan Africa. So essentially, we offer our services in sub-Saharan Africa and work very closely with United Nations and, until recently, USAID and Rescue South Africa were firm partners. They funded a lot of our training, and we now have, would you believe, 100 tons of rescue equipment. This rescue equipment sits at Nelson Mandela University in the Eastern Cape. At Quebeca, or PE as it was formerly known. And in fact, the students that are becoming paramedics of tomorrow utilize the equipment approximately 132 days a year for training. It's a 4-year BTEC degree course. So our equipment is used for training constantly, and then it's used for call-outs. And it's used for training elsewhere outside of the university. So we managed to, in spite of my age and getting a bit long in the tooth.
Well, that's true for all of us.
We managed to keep it all together, and we still have a group of volunteers. So, yeah.
Ian, how did you first get involved with Rescue South Africa, and what inspired you to stay on all these years?
Right. Well, what inspired me, I think I went to a, in 1979, I went to an Ideal Homes exhibition, which was something which was quite common, run by the Daily Mail, funnily enough. Every year they would have these homes exhibitions. And I went to one, and there was a fire engine from Sandton there, and I went on and had a look at it. And then they said, wouldn't you like to become a volunteer? And like most people who grow up would like to always ride on the back of a fire engine, I managed to make that dream come true. And I trained to become a firefighter in 1971 at Sandton Fire Department, and stayed there for approximately 35 years. In about 1999, a group of guys went to Turkey when we went as Rescue South Africa, although we weren't formed as Rescue South Africa yet, just a group of rescuers, and found, to our surprise, because we were very involved in motor vehicle extrication, but to our surprise, we found out how little we knew about rescue and how little equipment we had and the type of equipment we needed. And out of that was born the idea of forming an NGO. So myself and 9 other volunteers, some volunteers and other senior officers of Sandton and other fire departments around what was then Transvaal, Gauteng. And we decided to form an NGO, which we did in 2001. And we started getting equipment. We didn't even have a screwdriver to start with. And we now have 100 tons of equipment. We've been all over the world. The original group, I'm the last one standing, probably just because I'm really hard-headed and don't like to give up. So I am, the truth be told, slowly but surely creating a group of people that will take over. So there is a succession plan, and hopefully Rescue South Africa can continue to offer services, around in South Africa, as well as in the SADC region and Sub-Saharan Africa.
Ian, as you say, I mean, the times have changed, and what is needed from Rescue South Africa is not the same that what was needed 20 years ago. But the rescue part of the organization has responded to some really tough situations. What was the most challenging mission that you've led?
So I've never been a team leader. I've always done the logistics. So although I'm the CEO and have been the CEO since the beginning, I've never been a team leader, because while I do know quite a bit about it and have done numerous courses, I've always worked with other people that are better qualified than myself, and some of them have been good, strong team leaders with a lot of technical rescue knowledge. So I've always done the logistics and arranged to get us there and collected the funding and done essentially the logistics that got us through the borders and back out of the borders and found us where we're going to stay and so on, and interacted with the United Nations and our government and foreign governments. That's been my role.
Which in itself is challenging. I mean, if I remember from those days, it's not like you knew weeks in advance that an earthquake was going to happen.
No, you had to be quite assertive, which I, as you know, I am. And so you can't take no for an answer. So crossing borders, while one says it in a sentence, I've never been to a country that it didn't have its challenges of getting into the country with all that equipment. And it's quite technical, and there's a lot of paperwork involved. So getting that all done and insurances done. However, the biggest challenge has always been the fundraising. And it's just gotten more and more difficult. And there's so many charities doing great work, and our communities shrinking all the time, and the people we can ask money from are becoming fatigued by it almost. And all the NGOs that I know and charities that are doing great work, most of them are taking strain. I'm taking particular strain raising money, but I suppose that's just
the nature
it is.
Of the, yeah. Rescue work, of course, can be chaotic. And during the missions that we did together, did you ever draw on early lessons when things went sideways later?
I suppose, because if I think of the very first time I was in charge of the logistics was when we went to India. I can't remember, you came to India, right?
Yeah, I did.
Well, you did, yeah. Excuse the memory.
It's okay.
I'm also 25 years ago.
it's as far back for me as it is for you, and I'm not that much further behind you in age.
These things, one thing slips into another, you know. You remember that there were lots of challenges, and getting just even the aircraft and getting an animal inside the hold of inside the cabin of an aircraft, because we went there commercially, and having to argue with everybody because they didn't want firstly search dogs, which were police dogs at the time, we took two, and then they'd already worked out their weights, and you had to convince the pilot to recalculate all his weights with all our extra equipment. But I suppose the lesson that I learned out of the first one is just not an option. And it's just being dogged and absolutely not taking no for an answer, and using every bit of means at your disposal to either convince people or go around them, under them, over them, through them, whatever it takes, but get the job done. And I know one of the worst ones was when we went to Haiti and getting permission to land and then getting permission for our aircraft to come and fetch us. There were hours and days when I walked around really worried how I'm going to get the team back to South Africa. But we're in South Africa, so I must have got it right somehow. I know I'm talking from Cape Town, and I know I'm in South Africa, so I must have been successful. So there we go.
The man who won't take no for an answer. That's Ian Scher, the CEO of Rescue South Africa.